Hello, welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, a CineLinks podcast. Podcast where we discuss the latest books and novels with the people who wrote them. I'm your host, Steve Dunk, and however you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. If you like that intro music, then you've got great taste. That's Sam Witwer and the Crash Tones. If you want to hear more of the Crash Tones, you can download their latest album, Revenge of the Crash Tones, on iTunes or visit samwitwer.com. Check it out if you haven't already. Today we're talking to Sam Meggs, the author of the new Marvel YA novel, The Unstoppable Wasp, Built on Hope. We discuss the greatness that is Nadia Van Dyne, missing out on conventions, and as a dual citizen, what her favorite holiday is. Also the author of 2015's The Fangirl's Guide to the Galaxy, we discuss if things have improved in our fandom in the last 5 years. This is a spoiler discussion, so please, if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled, better stop listening now, but definitely double back after you've read the book. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. We have a really great guest today, and usually I write a little intro blurb for them, but, you know, just doing a bit of research online, it just dawned on me that if you go to her website, it's written so well, I can't write it any better. I would just be plagiarizing it, so I'm just going to read that. It's Sam Meggs, is a best-selling author of books, comics, and video games. She's been a senior games writer, including work on Marvel's Spider-Man, the author of many YA and middle-grade books, like the soon-to-be-released Unstoppable Wasp, Conquest, Tell No Tales, the excellent Fangirl's Guide to the Galaxy, which was great, and a comics writer for the beloved titles like Marvel Action, Captain Marvel, My Little Pony, and Transformers. I'm not sure what those three have in common, but we'll find out. She's also an on-air host for networks like Nerdist. My favorite, of course, fact about Sam Meggs is that she's a Canadian, like myself. And she's in Los Angeles, and we'll find out how long she's been there and what she misses most about Canada. Hi, Sam. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Of course. So let's start off with the most difficult question I'm going to ask you. First of all, happy Canada Day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. And happy Independence Day?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yep. You got it.
What is the better holiday?
I got to go with Canada Day, obviously. I think that's a given. It's funny, when I was in Canada, I always used to enjoy celebrating the 4th of July more, and now that I'm in the States, I'm more excited to celebrate Canada Day. I think it's about whatever you miss more.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
How long have you been in California now?
2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it home now? Has it been long enough?
I think Toronto will always be home for me, really. There's something about it that I always see myself going back one day, but, you know, we just bought a house here, which is very exciting. My first home, which is cool. And I can't complain about the weather. That's for sure.
You wouldn't be complaining here. It's hot in Toronto.
I have heard it's beautiful at home right now. Yeah. No, I really, you know what? The people down here are really lovely. The job opportunities, which is what I came down here for, have been great. Mm-hmm. And I can't complain about that, but I miss socialism so much.
That warms my heart because I'm a socialist, so I love that. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. So,
you know, celebrating anything right now is tricky.
Yeah, indeed.
There's just guilt attached to it. It feels like for if you have a good time, there's so many people not having a great time right now, and our hearts go out to them, of course. So what's it going to be like in California for July 4th? I mean, things have gotten a little bit worse there, right? In the last couple of weeks in California?
Yeah, I mean, it never really got better.
Right.
And they decided to open the state and it was too early. And unfortunately, just bags of people are getting ill again and our hospitals are filling up and everything. So I know they've closed the beaches here for the weekend and indoor restaurants, which again, probably shouldn't have been open in the first place.
Right.
But my 4th of July is going to look like being at home, which is what everything else looks like for me lately.
Sure.
I just hope that everyone is smart and has empathy in their heart for others and doesn't go out if they don't have to, or if they do have to, they wear a mask.
Are you like allowed even small groups there, or is there nothing?
I think that what you're allowed to do whatever you want here.
I guess,
you know,
yeah, right,
America,
right.
Freedom, sure. And all. They love that. They're really about that. So, yeah. But I think, you know, my hope is that people won't
right.
do that.
Yeah,
won't
yeah.
party, but I don't know. There have been fireworks going off nonstop for like weeks now. So, you know, maybe more of that. My poor dog is miserable about it.
Oh, my, I've got two and my beagle is not having it. She's super afraid of that.
I'm sorry. Ugh.
We're a little further ahead here. Yeah. Like, so patios are open here and you're allowed like groups of 10. So yeah, but no indoor restaurants yet. No large groups.
Yeah.
We were just talking about with some friends. Like, my three favorite things are conventions, going to concerts, and going to the movies. And like,
yeah.
And I feel like I'm never going to do any of those ever again. So.
Oh my gosh, I know. Conventions are my favorite thing too. And I had actually taken 2019 off from conventions because I was working a lot. I have 6 books out this year. Yep. I wanted to spend a lot of time working last year. And I was like, next year is going to be big because I have like a game out. I'll have all these books out. I'll be traveling a lot. I'll be doing all these cons. Like, just want to rest up and prepare for that. And now... so much for that, you know. Again, yeah. I'm grateful for my health and my family's health and all that, and to be working and, you know, all that good stuff. But I think we're allowed to mourn the year that wasn't a little bit, you know.
I'm really kind of looking forward to see. Are you allowed to say? Are you involved with any San Diego digital virtual panels or anything? Or?
Yes, we are allowed to. Okay. And we have been allowed to talk about them. So okay. I will be on 2. They both drop on July 23rd.
Okay.
One of them is a panel that I moderated with all video game writers about storytelling in video games, which was a really fun conversation. And the other one was moderated by Sarah Kuhn, the author of the Heroine Conflict.
Yep.
Series, which are like delightful, and it's all about the girl squad in like pop culture and in life, and that was a really fun chat too. It was like very intersectional, and I feel like I learned a lot. It was also really fun, so I'm excited. You know, San Diego's my favorite weekend of the whole year. I suppose I look forward to it every year. I go every year, and it is really a huge bummer that it won't happen in person. It's the right thing to do, and I'm glad we're able to celebrate at home and do San Diego Comic-Con at home, which will be really cool. But man, yeah, like you say, I miss it. I do.
It's going to be an interesting sort of, like, that'll be like the bellwether, I think, to see how San Diego pulls it off, right? If it comes across as, you know, and people are happy with it and it goes well, I think, you know, you'll see other people embrace that, and it gives it such a greater reach in a lot of ways too, right? International reach in a way that sometimes conventions just can't provide. So
no, that's a great point. And I go to Y'all West every year as well, which is like a YA convention that takes place here in Santa Monica locally. And it's all free. It's for teens. It takes place at a high school. Like, it's super, super, it's all like organized by authors for teens. And you know, they get like a few thousand people every year and it's great, but we ran it online this year, and they were pushing like 30,000, over 30,000 people. Like, so many more people all over the world were able to access the event because it was online. And it's just, it is kind of nice. Like, even though for those of us who are privileged enough to have the opportunity to go to these things, we're like, oh, I miss seeing my friends. Because for a lot of us, this is kind of sometimes the only way that we interact with people, you know, like, who live all over the country or all over the world, even, that are our friends we don't get to see otherwise. Like, really, overall, it's a much more inclusive experience, to your point. So I think that is definitely the upside.
I'm very looking forward also to Sarah Kuhn's wrote that Dr. Aphra audiobook, which is
yes,
and like, just cannot. I mean, Aphra's obviously a great character, and Sarah Kuhn's a great writer. So, I mean, that's just, and all the folks at Penguin that do those audiobooks are just, they're so great. So very, definitely, very excited. And I know you're a Star Wars nut like I am. I used to write for Force.net. So,
oh, cool.
Star Wars is in my blood, and we'll talk about it, but I very much appreciated the couple of Star Wars mentions in the book we're actually here to talk about. but definitely looking forward to those panels though. So you've already recorded them. That's interesting. Good to know.
Yes.
Too. So, very much looking forward to see those and all the other panels, and just to see how they pull it off. And it's going to be very interesting, but silver linings maybe, right?
Absolutely.
You are here for The Unstoppable Wasp Built on Hope. And and that comes out, what's today, the 7th? So that comes out in a week. I guess let's just go with the basics. What is The Unstoppable Wasp Built on Hope about, and who is Nadia Van Dyne?
Yeah, so The Unstoppable Wasp Built on Hope follows the Unstoppable Wasp, who is Nadia Van Dyne, as she tries to be basically the best teen and superhero and friend and lab runner and driver and all of the different things that she wants to be as a teenage girl, you know, the best version of that that she can possibly be, which is really difficult. I think that we're, you know, I relate to this. We're all under a lot of pressure to do a lot of things all the time and to be really good at them all constantly. And, you know, we want to be good at our jobs. We want to be good to our friends. We want to be good to our family. We want to be good to ourselves. And it often feels like there aren't enough hours in the day to do all of those things. So when Nadia discovers an AI device that is specifically created to give you more time to do all the things that you want to do, she's very into it. But as you can imagine, it is a superhero book and things do not go according to plan. Yeah, it was really fun writing about Nadia. I think maybe not a lot of people are familiar with her as a character.
Yeah,
I'm excited for that.
And for people that don't know, yeah, she had a short run. She's created by Mark Waid, and then Charles Whitley wrote a short run for her. Two short runs, I guess.
Jeremy.
And yeah, so she didn't get a huge reach. And what's interesting about her character is that people will, you know, obviously we think of Hope Van Dyne, right?
Yes, when we think
films. From the film. So she was actually based on that character, right?
She is a bit of a different animal altogether.
And not to say they're the same, but
yeah, inspired by, I would
inspired
say.
By. Sorry, that yeah. Okay, that's a better way to put it. Yeah.
That take on the character for yeah. sure.
What was it like writing for Nadia, who's inspired by somebody else and who had been created and then written by somebody else? So you're, you know, taking this character who's been established a little bit anyways, and it's your job to sort of have her, you know, you got to create a new story at the same time, right? Because you can't retell the story that's already been told, but you want to take Nadia into sort of new and exciting directions. And so what was that like for you, sort of writing for somebody already established, which, I mean, you've done before, but.
Yeah, I get this question a lot, actually, where people are like, oh, what's it like writing for other people's IPs? Or do you find it really limiting to, you know, write for this character who's been around before and already has an established personality and friends and all this stuff? But I actually, as someone who primarily does write for IP, like I've written for Transformers and My Little Pony and Star Wars and Star Trek and, you know, tons of different Marvel properties. I actually really love it. I like the box that it gives me to work in, because there's nothing more stressful to me than looking at a blank page and knowing that I can do anything at all in the world with it. Like, I find that extremely stressful, actually, because suddenly there's so many options and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm like overwhelmed with choice. So the sort of creative constraints that working with IP gives you is really appealing to me. It's actually what I like about writing for video games so much too. Those constraints are usually technological and are like based on graphics or gameplay and stuff like that, but it's the same kind of concept where you are working within this box. And that's what I love about writing for established characters. You know, there are certain things that are always true about Nadia. We know that she is very smart, a genius. We know that she has bipolar disorder and she's learning how to deal with that. We know that she is an eternal optimist, you know, despite being raised in the Red Room, like Black Widow, to be a super science assassin, basically. And after escaping, she basically just became like the most lighthearted, optimistic, uncynical possible person. Just like the opposite of me, and maybe the opposite of what you would expect for someone who had been through that. So there are these certain things that are always true about Nadia. And then to your point, you work within that to tell a story or to have the character learn something that they have not had the opportunity to learn yet. So in Unstoppable Wasp, it's, you know, she's come to all these different realizations about herself. She has a stepmom. She doesn't know a lot about her bio mom. She's dealing with her mental health, with her friends, with her lab. She has all this stuff going and she kind of has to figure out how to deal with all of it now, all of these things that were set up over the course of the comics, which are so brilliant, by the way. Jeremy's two runs on the Wasp are just absolutely delightful, and I highly suggest you pick them up if you haven't had the chance to read them. It's just two trades, or three maybe. Anyway,
two.
They're great. Two, okay, they're great. Yeah, so it's like taking what was already established and then kind of expanding on that into taking stuff to its kind of logical conclusion, I think. Mm-hmm. So that was really fun. I really enjoyed that. And I love, she, you know, talking about girl squads, she has this girl squad around her of four other teen girl scientists who work together in a lab called Genius in Action Research Labs, or GIRL for short.
Yep.
And it's really, I love an ensemble. I love you working with all their different personalities, and, you know, put five people in a room and you're always going to get interesting dynamics, right? So
I think one of the, I really enjoyed reading this book. I had a great time reading it.
Well, thank you.
You know, and you kept all sort of like the fun aspects that were already in place, right? Like with Nadia Science Facts and,
yeah,
you know, sort of so many things like that. And it is very much an in-universe book. It's a you know, it is very much a Marvel book. So, but mm-hmm. I was talking to someone about the other day who's not super familiar with Marvel, and I said, well, don't let that scare you away. I think it reads very well, even if you don't know what a Flerken is or whatever.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it reads very well. And one of the things that really, I really thought you really did a good job, and you mentioned it quickly, and no great character is defined by one thing, but definitely, you know, with Nadia, her mental illness, her bipolar disorder is something she has to deal with, which she, and she does a great job of dealing with it. She has, her friends are great and deal with it. How was that writing something like that for you? Because, you know, it dawned on me that I knew very little about bipolar disorder reading it. Right. I feel like it's sort of still like it's an unknown thing. And I almost feel, to be honest with you, just from my own experience and point of view, I kind of feel like a lot of people sort of like dismiss it in a lot of ways as like it's probably misdiagnosed a lot, I would imagine. I haven't done that type of research, but you know, just these manic hypomanic depressive episodes that people go through and the cycles, and like I wonder how was that for you writing a character sort of like with from that approach, because again, it doesn't define her by any stretch. I mean, and she's all the things you've already mentioned about her are totally true. She's a genius and great, and I mean, God, if I was picking friends, like,
right?
I mean, like, I want Nadia as my friend. Like, you're not going to get a better friend.
Well, I think that was really exciting for me to take on, because, you know, I have anxiety and depression, which is not the same as bipolar disorder at all, but I see a therapist regularly, and seeing a therapist changed my life. It's like the best thing that's ever happened to me. I think everybody should see a therapist, and we would all be much healthier and happier humans. So I really want to, and I think a lot of teens deal with mental illness, like have things that they're working through. Like it's a normal thing. Going to therapy is a normal thing. And I just wanted to normalize that. And what you said is absolutely true, that Nadia having bipolar, like it's just one of the many things that make up Nadia. It doesn't define her by any means. It's just something that she's learning to handle and take care of in the same way that she has to learn how to drive, or that she has to learn how to be a good friend or be a good superhero. You know, it's a part of her. It's something that her father, Hank, also dealt with in his life. And so she wants to be proactive about it. And I think it just shows like a really healthy way of dealing with mental illness. And we had some really, really great psychologists and scientists who also consulted on the comic, but then who also helped to consult on the book.
Oh, okay.
Including one great psychologist who deals a lot with patients who have bipolar disorder. And so a lot of the therapy sessions and strategies that Nadia uses came straight from him, Dr. Connors, and was also able to take a look at the whole story and to sort of point out like, you know, what could be viewed as a sign that maybe she's having an episode or not, and like how to talk through that in a way that's like responsible.
I thought great word, because I sort of, one of the things I wrote down was I thought you handled it very responsibly and and very thoughtfully. And one of the things that dawned on me too is that like I didn't, you know, a lot of times when mental characters with mental illness are written, they're written sympathetically, and I didn't feel that at all. And I suspect that's, and I'm thinking, because Nadia wouldn't want you hurt your sympathy either, right? Like, she doesn't want. She wouldn't want that, right? So
no.
Yeah, and so that's so I'm just in that sense. I think that's why you wrote her so well, because
because you don't
read this thinking, man, I really feel sorry for her. I didn't, because she had such a great strong understanding of it, and so did her family and friends, right? So
yeah. Thank you. That's cool. Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed that.
But again, she's way more than one thing. And one of the really cool, like, I'm a huge science nerd myself, and I'm a huge artificial intelligence nerd as well.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
We're not going to get into spoilers here. We're not going to talk about the ending of the book and stuff, because there's one really cool twist for sure.
And,
there's a couple that were really interesting. But so a lot of the stories about her, she ends up discovering a lot about her past in this book.
Yeah.
You know, she really comes full circle in the sense that, you know, here's a girl, like you said, she wants everything. She's trying to be everything, and she wants everything. She wants the American dream in a lot of ways. And
yeah.
And she's realizing that that's hard in a 24 hour day.
Yeah, and, definitely.
And so she enlists the help of some artificial intelligence named Vera. And one of the cool things I like just about artificial intelligence is how scary it is. And, you know, intrinsically, whose values does machine learning take on? It's up to whoever creates it. And that's the scary part of artificial intelligence, right?
Yeah.
If the bad guys invent it first, then we're all in trouble. But if the good guys do, then we're going to solve world hunger. So it's such a fine line. And one of the things, I'm wondering sort of what were your thoughts when you were looking at the machine intelligence at all? If you went, did you go deep on it at all, or just sort of try and keep it surface level? Because it's one of those subjects where you can, like, if you read like a Nick Bostrom novel,
yeah,
I don't understand any of it, but I'm like, dude, I know it scares the crap out of me.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm also a big nerd about stuff like that. And yeah. I read a lot, especially about technology bias, and about how, you know, even if it's not someone evil programming the thing, you know, the biases that we as people have, even unconsciously, end up in the technology, right? So that's why automatic hiring systems are so dangerous, and like anything like that it becomes infused with all the things that make us bad as people that we try to like work through and get rid of on our own, but computers don't know that they're learning bias from us. So I really wanted to sort of touch on that a little bit in the AI story, that even if you think you are doing something good, you could have like the best intentions in the world, but you know, that's not always how things turn out when you're talking about things that have the capability to learn and grow for themselves, or things that learn directly from humans. There's always going to be an inherent risk in that, I think, that can really be dangerous.
I was just going to say that, yeah, like intentions are at the forefront of this book, and not even just with the machine intelligence, but even with the people around her. There's a lot, you know, as Nadia sort of like gets deeper and deeper into this pursuit of you know, trying to be perfect all the time.
Yeah.
She ends up sort of like alienating a lot of her friends and family, and not recognizing that maybe they have the best intentions as well, but it may seem like they may seem like roadblocks, but at the end, you know, it becomes something else. And so I love that duplicity between, like, there's, you know, between intentions and even hers are always well, and she's always well-intentioned, but not always, doesn't get the result. And that ends up being a lot of frustration for her. And that's why I thought it was really good when you, this isn't really a huge spoiler, I guess. I don't know if we can, let's just say it. So this is a little quick spoiler alert. If anyone hasn't read it, this is a little minor spoiler. Nadia finds a list of her mother from her mother.
Yeah, her bio mom.
Her bio mom, Maria, who a list of things that she always wanted Nadia to do, or for her to do with Nadia. Mm-hmm. And I love that you sort of like start to get away from that list as Nadia sort of like starts to take on too much. And so what became an inspiration starts to become a burden as well.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting thing. So talk about sort of like as you expanded her, like you, like I said, a lot of this book is about, she's uncovering a lot of truth about her past, but then even that becomes just one more thing she has to do that day.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, finding this list of from her bio mom, her birth mom, of all these things that she wanted to do with Nadia one day and didn't get the chance to because she died like shortly after Nadia was born. Nadia never got to know her. Is as Nadia is trying to figure out who she is and who she wants to be, she suddenly feels like she's found this, I don't know, almost like shortcut to like, oh, here's all that I can connect with my mom. I can figure out who I am. Like, this is who she wanted me to be, or the stuff that she wanted me to do. And she gets really obsessive over it. And I also have like a very obsessive personality where like I find a new thing and it's all I want to do, or I become convinced that like if I do this thing, then everything else will feel better or be better. And there's a lot of that with her, and it's just like adding one more thing onto this pile of stuff that she has to do that's already precariously large. But it is important as well. Like, that's a big personal thing for her. But then it becomes like, at what point is it just doing what you think you're supposed to be doing, or what somebody else wants you to do, as opposed to like what would actually make you happy? How do you find out what that is? How do you honor, your birth mom who you never got to know, while also still being like kind and respectful to Janet Van Dyne, who is the original Wasp, who has now like adopted Nadia, and is basically her stepmom? Yeah, because you want to respect that relationship too. It's complicated. Nadia has like a complicated family dynamic, which I think is true of a lot of people. The nuclear family is like a myth largely. So, yeah, and complicated is not necessarily bad. It just means that it's something you have to navigate, right?
Absolutely. And it's funny how, as you know, you pile it on as the book goes on too, right?
Yeah,
Like
yeah, yeah.
you don't eliminate anything, as not really, as things move on and things get more complicated until it reaches a breaking point. And that
Yeah.
is the third act of the novel, right? Which we won't talk
Yep.
about too much, but man, most people can sort of understand that, it reaches a climax and then
Yep.
it's something's got to go, right? Something's
Yeah.
it's a dam that breaks. And how Nadia reacts to that is really key, what's key to this book and the ending for sure. How much fun was it? Because again, this book is full of fun Marvel and pop culture references. One of the fun, so talk about maybe the list, Maria's list, her mother's list that she found. Did you how like You came up with those, I assume, and
Yes.
how much fun was it putting that list together? And I gotta thank you for the Star Wars. Huge Star Wars fan myself, so I love the Star Wars references. And then, of course, when she does watch a couple of them, it's didn't wasn't crazy about
Didn't
the
go super
prequels. The
well there. Yeah, yeah,
prequels weren't. So just maybe talk about how much fun just the pop culture. And by the way, everybody, there's some really fun cameos, and there's one cameo in particular that I think if you probably do enough research on Sam, you might realize what that is.
Indeed.
I won't say what it is, but I will say it's if you probably do a bit of reading about Sam, you may figure it out.
Thank
It's awesome, by the way. It's a great cameo.
you. It was so fun coming up with the list. Yeah, it was an absolute blast. It was trying to think about what Maria, who was Hungarian but captured in Russia and married an American,
And in a different
and was
decade,
in a different
and
decade, yeah, and was planning on moving, like immigrating to America, like what she would want to share with her future daughter. And as the daughter of an Eastern European immigrant myself, it was, I feel like I have some experience with that sort of like merging of cultures, and what it looks like to want to be like, oh, I want her to be like American, but then I also don't want her to lose like her culture, but also like we want to like assimilate, but also I don't want her to like lose what makes her special and the things that I love about my culture and all of that. So there was like a fun sort of, I wanted to express that sort of both dichotomy and like confluence of ideas at the same time. Yeah.
See, that would be fun because that's sort of the type of list. I'm 44, so like I would that's like list speaks to me
Yeah.
like just from the time period, right? Like I was, that's sort of all things. I'm like, yeah, that's all. These are all great things. Of course, you should absolutely do all this stuff.
Yes.
And again, the Star Wars shout outs are fantastic and were super fun.
Thank you.
I do want to give a quick, this book just looks great. And so a quick shout out to Laura Bufano, who did all the art.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. She did another Canadian. She did the end papers as well. And she did several spot illustrations throughout the thing. That's right. And she is also Canadian.
That's right.
It's a very Canadian book.
Very Canadian. Yes.
So gosh, I was so fortunate to have her on the project. She just captured the front cover of the book, captures Nadia's essence, I think, so well, in that it's like both fun and serious. Soft but also kind of hard in a way. I don't know, she just like nailed it. It's amazing.
And I'm even so the lucky. And the girl squad, GIRL squad, yep, all look fantastic. And like you said, the characters throughout, it's a great looking book, reads really well. I can't recommend it enough. I'm wondering, you've now written a lot of novels, a lot of comic books, and a lot of video games now. Mm-hmm. You have a preference? You have one? Do you have? Or are they all?
Oh,
that's
such a hard question. I know. I love writing comics.
Do you?
Comics
okay.
are my favorite. Yeah, because I think that.
I mean, this reminds me of a comic in a lot of ways.
Oh, thank you.
For sure.
I was really aiming for that.
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. Big time. Yeah. Yeah.
I love serialized storytelling. So I love television. I love episodic television. Comics really give you that sort of, I studied serialized fiction, Victorian serialized fiction when I was doing my master's degree. Like, I just love that kind of storytelling. So comics really gives you that. And I think I really love collaborating. Again, it's why I like working in video games so much, but that's like you're collaborating with like 300 people sometimes, which can be kind of a challenge in and of itself. So with comics, you just have this collaboration between you and the artist and the letterer and the colorer. And it's, I don't know, it's great because I can put a bunch of words on the page and then my editor makes them better. And then my illustrator makes them even better with stuff I could never possibly think of to throw in there myself. And it's this great, like, group project basically, where everybody's like enthusiastic and super like more talented than I am, and you get like something really fun and colorful, and it has a lot of great potential for storytelling. I also love that comics are less limited by technological constraints than like a video game, where you can only put so many things on the screen at once, or your graphics aren't very good, or the processor can't handle it, or the engine is limiting, or whatever. Whereas in comics, my illustrator will probably be angry with me, but like I can kind of ask for whatever, you know? So it's great. I love comics. I mean, I love novels too, and writing for Nadia was super, super fun. Don't get me wrong, but
sure.
It's gotta be comics.
Well, something's got to be first. So that's
great. It's okay.
That's a great, and any answer would have been perfectly fine and acceptable.
Thank you.
Because I mean, they're all great mediums. Obviously, we love them all.
Yeah.
You're such a champion. You know, like you literally are like a champion for women in pop culture and women in the industry, and been fighting for it and writing about it for so long now. And you know, this book is an unabashed. Sorry, girl power, lack of a better.
Thank you.
Sorry, it's a dumb way.
That's totally what it is. Yeah.
But it's not like, it doesn't hit you over the head with it. It's just like, it is what it is, right? Here are these formidable, awesome, intelligent women, and we'd all be more than lucky to be in any of their presence. I'm just wondering, you've been doing this for a lot of years now, and you've probably seen the industry change, and it has changed a lot exponentially, I think, in the last handful of years. Like, how is it? What's maybe the biggest thing you've seen for, in a good way, change? Like, how are we doing, men? Like, how are we doing? Are we doing better? Please tell me we're doing better, because some of us are.
I mean, I think that, to your point, there definitely has been a change, especially over the last 5 years, which is great. I think that largely the change has been an acknowledgement of the problem, which is a great place to start. So,
right.
You know, even 5 years ago, it was kind of like, we're not seeing a lot of women, people of color, marginalized people on the screen and on the page. I think in a lot of ways, we started to make progress there, which is great. You know, we got a Black Panther movie. We got Captain Marvel. That's cool. I think, though, a place that we're still struggling and where we still need to improve and have the opportunity to improve is behind the page and behind the screen. only like 16-22% of comic book creators and game developers are women. That's still like an abysmally low number. And so we really want people to have the opportunity to tell their own stories. We want everyone with all kinds of different life experiences and stories to be able to share that. And, you know, something that I always say is like, I have seen probably 45 different iterations of guy with light stubble who is white, gets superpowers. And they've all been great. And I thoroughly enjoyed all of them. But I'm sort of like bored of it now. Yeah. I'm like ready for something new.
Sure.
And I think that that's the great thing about getting different kinds of people to tell different kinds of stories, is that everyone gets more interesting stories out of that as a consumer of stories, you know, as a reader or as a watcher. So everybody wins, you know. It's not that we should get rid of Captain America, it's that we also have room for Captain Marvel and Black Panther and Silk and Miles Morales and all of these different superheroes. You know, there is no finite amount of page space. we have page space for them all. So
right.
Yeah, I would just love to see more acceptance of marginalized creators. And you know, recently I'm sure you're aware that there's been sort of a bit of a reckoning online in terms of abusive or unacceptable behaviors in both the comic book and video game industry. And it, to your point about like, are men doing better? What can men do to help out? The biggest thing I think is to hold your colleagues accountable. You know, great. If you see behavior that is sort of like weird or suspicious, or even like if you see something happen in person that, you know, isn't cool, or if you hear whispers, like, you know, stand up for the marginalized people that you work with, because it's hard for them to carve out a space for themselves. So
yeah, and that's you know, in an industry where, you know, it has been so dominated by that one voice for so long, it's it can be difficult even to do that sometimes, to come out and speak on behalf of someone else for fear of
totally
the vitriol which can be unleashed in the hellscape that is Twitter.
Totally. Yeah. Well, so, people are afraid for their jobs too. Like,
yeah,
men are afraid for their jobs, but the difference is that they can opt out of being involved in those conversations, but women and the marginalized people who are like bearing the brunt of it, like, we don't get to opt out of that, you know.
Right,
like if there's
right.
someone at work who wants us gone, like, we don't get to be like, oh, I'm afraid for my job, so I'm gonna like opt out of this interaction. It's like I am also afraid for my job. Like, I totally get it. So
right.
yeah
it's, I know,
it's tough, right? Like, it's not an asking an easy thing of anybody. So
I know, you know, I've seen so many people say like, oh, why don't you just quit, or why don't you just leave, or why don't you just do that? I'm like, well, it's not that easy.
It's not that easy,
right? When you're the only voice in the room, right? It can be
totally
hard, so. Mm-hmm. Those are all great things, and that's one thing you definitely need to do, is we need to just, I mean, it's just the decent right thing to do, like, just to help stick up for marginalized people no matter what, right? And I mean, like, I don't know if anybody with half a brain looks at the content we've got in the last few years and the stuff that people of color and women the stuff that you guys are pumping out is so great. I just think of, like, anyone out there listening, take away all the stuff that's been created by a woman or a person of color the last 5 years out of your life, and then see what you're left with, and then tell me if that's a satisfying life, because it wouldn't
be. I mean,
be
it's just fun, right? Like, it's all like, different, like, interesting new kinds of stories.
There's room for everything,
and I love
right?
that. Yeah, exactly.
So, well, again, thank you so much, Sam, for doing this. I really appreciate it.
This is super fun.
Yeah, like, I really think, like, you know, like, the Fangirls Guide to the Galaxy was such a watershed in a lot of ways, and you know,
I
remember reading it and learning a lot, especially a lot of the lingo and the jargon, and just being like, well, and just being a dumb guy and just be like, oh, okay, yeah, you can't say that, and here's why. Well, okay, well, it makes sense, right? And I'm not gonna do that anymore.
Stuff that you would like never know about unless somebody stops and tells you, like, hey, did you realize this? And it's like, oh, dang. Like, it's not malice, it's just ignorance. And we
absolutely
all have things that we're ignorant about. So thank you for reading it. That's really cool.
Of course. And again, Unstoppable Wasp, Built on Hope, is a novel that comes out on July 15th. So make sure everybody runs out there. Do you have any particular bookstores or online places that you prefer folks go to?
I would love for you to order from whoever your favorite local independent bookseller is, local to you.
Okay.
Whoever you want to support in your community, it would be great to give them that order, as opposed to
the big guy.
The big boys.
That weird bald guy.
Yeah, he doesn't need any more money, trust me. And yeah, The Unstoppable Wasp is out July 14th.
I said the 15th, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, that's okay. And I actually just had a book come out last week called Conquest with Imprint Macmillan, and it's about two preteens who go on a scavenger hunt at Comic-Con. So if you're missing con season as much as we are, maybe that'll help a little bit.
That will be the perfect companion book to the digital San Diego Comic-Con that is fast.
Exactly.
God, that's only 2 weeks away. My God.
Where's the year going, honestly? Oh,
I know. So anyways, everyone look forward to look out for Sam on the panels we talked about for San Diego on July 23rd. And look out for Unstoppable Wasp. And God, I think that's good, Sam. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This was such a blast. I really appreciate you taking the time.
No problem. There you have it, another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Sam Meggs for taking the time to speak with us. Be sure to check out those two panels she's a part of on July 23rd for the San Diego Comic-Con virtual event. I'm sure they're going to be awesome. The Unstoppable Wasp, Built on Hope, comes out July 14th. Make sure you check it out. It's a lot of fun. And to see more of what Sam has going on, be sure to head on over to sammeggs.com. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen and head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Bye for now.
Our time has come, it's time to go now.